Hello, welcome to Growing Wild. I'm Charlotte Petts and this is Radio Reverb. It's been a while, been a good 3 months since the last show, so I hope you've enjoyed Judi Dench on loop. I'm pretty happy to be able to say that sentence, to be honest. So I hope you had a great summer and we're back now, and hopefully you won't have such a long break again. I've missed it, I've missed you. So coming up on this month's show, I've been trotting around to all sorts of different places during the summer, so I'm going to bring you a few voices from my expeditions and hope that you enjoy them as much as I enjoyed visiting them. We've got the Old Tree Brewery giving us a tour of their edible garden and brew house. I went to Elderflower Field Festival, so I'm going to bring you a couple of voices from there, namely actually Green Caterpillar, who are a brilliant forest school company who teach kids to do the most fabulous things. So it's a nice little package from them. And I've got an interview from the National Veg Society, who I met at the South of England show, and a little foraging walk as well with Jane, the affectionately known as the Hedge Witch. But before all that, I'm going to play a song, and it's T-Rex. Was T-Rex and Hot Love. Can anyone listen to that without thinking about Billy Elliot these days? You know that film, the boy who's learning how to be a ballerina, and Julie Waters is his teacher. It's a brilliant film, so I don't really mind that it invokes such memories, but still, I wonder what T-Rex would think about that. Okay, so coming up first, we go off to Elderflower Fields. Now, this is a great festival which happens out in the Ashdown Forest, and it's run by So Sussex, who are a company actually who we've been to visit before on this show, and we did pond dipping and various bits and bobs with Barkham Primary School. And this is kind of their flagship event of the year, really. It's the big festival that they put on, and it runs at the end of May, and they have so many things going on there. It was one of those things that was set up sort of geared primarily towards kids and kind of encouraging their education of the outdoors, really. And so there's so many workshops and so many things for them to go and do, and it's right up my alley, basically, in my pushing of getting kids outside and teaching them young how to appreciate what's around them and what and yeah, we all know my rhetoric, I won't go on. So the first voice we're going to hear is Jane, who affectionately is known as the Hedge Witch. And I just went out on a little foraging walk with her. So this was something that adults and kids could do. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff for adults to do as well. However, I think that their main enjoyment is that they can just sort of farm their kids off and know that they're going to get entertained and they can have a beer in front of a band. We're going to hear Jane, and it's just a little clip, really, just to give you an idea of the sort of thing that was happening. And if ever there's a foraging walk anywhere, I'm pretty much going to be on it. So here we pick up Jane discovering some ground ivy.
It's called an ivy because it's a little creeper. So you only see it sort of do little spires when it's flowering. And a guy on the walk this morning told me another name, which is ale hoof. So it sort of looks a bit like a hoof. And as you said, it was used to clear the beer before hops. You've probably got it in your garden as well, but you can tell it's quite medicinal. It's got
so and it's not easy to confuse for anything else.
No.
A bit like sage.
Yeah, you can tell it's a herb, can't you?
Literally.
Yeah. So a few of those in with your salad and the flowers, like lactose, that would be really nice. So I'm looking for little spikes of sort of red. Ah, oh, here we are. See, you can't see it, and then you suddenly walk on top of it. Okay. So you wouldn't normally see. This is obviously the end of its sort of cycle. You can usually pick sorrel all year round, but it's one of the really first plants to start growing in the spring. And depending on where, this is probably very poor soil, so it's tiny, but it's always got like an arrowhead leaf. So it's got two pointy bits in there, but you know when you taste a little bit that it's sorrel because it's absolutely lovely. And again, in the old days, when people had run out of all their fruit that they'd kept for the winter before the new fruit, they would make a tart with it. Isn't it delicious?
Yeah.
So you'd add honey with them and put them on some pastry because it is almost fruity, isn't it? That's been used, you know, for centuries by our ancestors.
So we've just been on a nice walk with you. Why do you think it's important to teach people about foraging?
Just to give them the confidence, because most people seem to have grown up being told, don't touch anything, it's all poisonous. And this is just to open our eyes to what's around us, 80%, which is edible, and to reconnect with our ancestors who would have eaten all this, you know, all the time.
Yeah. Do you find it sort of, it's quite connecting just generally for us to look around and see that there's so many things that can feed us so readily?
Yeah, yes. It's and it's free. And so much better for you than, as we were saying, something that's been force grown under a, you know, polytunnel in God knows where. And something that's grown in the sunshine on the cliff is going to have so much better energetic signature, or whatever you like to call it, that would feed us on so many levels, not just as a food. Yes, definitely.
And if someone was interested in going on a walk with you, or I mean, how can people find you?
Hedgewitch Foraged Fine Food, you will get there, and there's an email on there. But mostly, go and buy my produce, which is in sort of the health food shops in Brighton and Hove, and his bee, and it's got all the bump on there on the pestos and things.
Oh, great. I think I had some of your pesto, actually.
Did you? Yeah,
yeah,
the picnic.
Wild garlic.
Yes.
So nice.
Thank you.
So that was Jane from Hedgewitch Fine Foraged Foods, which is a mouthful. It's just a little taster of, I mean, that walk actually went on for quite a long time, but I mean, I'm sorry if the wind in that audio hurt your ears a little bit. It was quite blustery. And the sort of booming of the live stage as well going on behind. It's just so nice to be at a festival and to head out on a little foraging walk and pick up some food and to learn about the environment and the group that were with us. You know, we're really quite inspired by doing that, and I just had no idea that all these things around them they could enjoy and eat and taste. And after that initial sort of fear of am I going to die, and then after 2 seconds realizing that they wouldn't, and actually what they're eating is rather tasty, it's just nice to see it. It's nice to see it in people's faces and to spread the joy of the forage. Okay, so also from this festival I went and hung out with Green Caterpillar. This is run by predominantly Judy and her excellent crew, and they're a forest school, so they were running workshops there, sort of mini versions of the forest school. They've also done overnight camps with kids, which I've done with them actually, and but this was just an afternoon on each day of the festival, which I think was sort of 4 or 5 days, and exploring different activities that the kids could do in the woods. But I'll let Judy tell you about it, and this is her explaining to us exactly what forest school is.
Forest school came over from Scandinavia, and it's a it's about connecting children back into nature. Sort of holistic learning, children come out and learn to sort of understand the risks involved with being out in the woods, and sort of learning to skills that will teach them perseverance and patience. And just to enjoy being sort of out in the wild and beginning to connect with what's around them.
What sort of ages do you?
Any age. When we're working within schools, we work from reception right through to... Generally, we work in primary school, but it's brilliant for sort of secondary schools, just for children to sort of get out and away from sort of technology and to relax.
And what sort of activities do you do?
Woodcraft, so we make rope using sort of natural wooden discs where they plait the rope. We cook on the fire, den build, play in the mud, that's the best bit, playing in the mud. and sort of children, opportunities for children just to go off and if they want to pick up a book and sit under a tree or just even go and chat with a friend, that's absolutely fine, it's their choice.
Okay.
And that's the big thing with forest school, it's for them to be able to choose. We're not telling them, right, you've got 5 minutes to do this. They can keep going back to the same thing if they want to. Okay. And they can just sort of take, you know, it's all about independence and making choices and gaining confidence.
And you've been running groups at this festival for the last couple of days. You're just about to do your final.
Indeed.
And they've been how long is each session?
Each session has been 2 hours.
Yeah. How many kids have you got coming this time?
We've got 29 this time.
Mm-hmm. Exciting. Great. Well, I look forward to sitting in on some of your sessions.
Fantastic.
What are you doing?
Violet and her mummy have been making friendship bracelets, and it's called Nordic Slinging.
Nordic Slinging?
Nordic Slinging.
What does that mean?
So it comes from Scandinavia, and it basically is you each have 2 pieces of wool, and you have one colour in each, and you throw opposites or pass opposites to each other. And it braids this beautiful friendship bracelet.
Oh,
Violet
wow.
will tell you.
So you've got it hanging in the tree. It's tied across.
It's tied across. So you have a piece of paracord between 2 trees. You attach the rope to the top of it, so that you've got 4 bits of string or wool hanging down. And then on each at the end of each piece of wool, you've got a tree trophy.
Great.
And then you have in each hand and you throw it to the opposite.
And then that just makes
a friendship bracelet. And you choose a friend to do it with. And Violet chose her best friend.
Are you happy with your bracelet?
Can you tell, Charlotte how old you are, Violet?
4.
You're 4. Have you made something like that before? No. Was it fun?
Yeah.
Good. You're going to keep it forever?
Yes.
Good. sitting around this lovely campfire. We've got two kettles on there and some metal prongs sticking out of it, heating up. Why are they doing that, Stuart?
These are branding irons, and on the branding irons we have a caterpillar, we have a little acorn, a tree, and a fire shape.
And what do you brand? Not each other, I hope.
No, what we're using is we're using some pieces of oak that we've got here, and we're going to brand those out, and we're going to make shapes on them.
But you've got some pretty hefty gloves on there.
Yes, safety is key. So he wears a pair of gloves and I do too.
What's your name?
Oscar.
Oscar, have you done this before?
No.
Which one are you going to go for? Which branding iron?
I'm not sure yet. I might go for the last one.
The last one, the fire?
Yeah.
That's good. You know, it's in the fire. Have a picture of a fire.
Come on, let's do it then. It's nice and glowing, toasty hot. Up you get, stand up. Hold the end there. It's not hot, and I'll hold the other end.
So you've just got a piece of oak on the ground, and now you're pressing it into the wood. It's smoking.
That's right.
Oh, it's exciting, isn't it?
And when it becomes dark around the edge, you just pop it off.
And then what would you do with that?
Well, a lot of them are actually putting their names on them and putting them on their bedroom doors.
Oh, nice.
Making a pattern.
Do you think you might do that, Oscar?
Yeah.
Great. What's your section here about, Thea?
It's all about wildlife education. Okay, so basically showing these kids all these different skulls, snake skins, owl pellets, other bits and pieces to inspire them to look for wildlife when they go out, because very often you don't always see foxes and deer when you go for a walk.
What skulls do you have here? We've got an array of sizes.
We've got fox and badger, we've got mole, we've got squirrel, roe deer and wild boar. Not that you'll see many of those around the place.
It's an enormous head.
It is, absolute monster.
Yeah.
See, most people think that everything is a dinosaur stuff.
Do they? So, yeah. Is that the instant answer?
Oh, pretty much so, right. Yeah. And if I say, what about this one, which has got a black and white head, they say, zebra. So, we're talking about British animals here. So it is a badger.
So it's worthwhile what you're doing.
Definitely.
You're definitely educating them.
I hope so. What do you want to start with, guys? Anything that you want to start with the poo, yes? Okay.
Always.
Okay, that's what that is. Poo. Fresh poo. Found this morning.
Is it real poo?
Is it real poo? No, it's not. It's fake poo. Okay? It's just as a little demonstration, okay? Because a lot of people think that this is poo. And this is not poo. Okay? This is not poo at all. Does anyone know what this might be? It's an owl pellet. And what is an owl pellet? Couldn't have said it better myself. That's exactly true. Because if we look at a bird's beak, a bird doesn't have any teeth. So he kills the mouse or the vole, will swallow the whole thing down, and inside his special tummy called a gizzard, that will get digested and chopped up and grinded down, and he'll cough all the bones and the fur back up, and he'll take all the meat and everything down into his tummy and finish digesting it. Okay? And then the end result is this pellet, which if you were to go under that oak tree or any of these trees around here, you might find one of these yourself underneath an oak tree. And then what you do is you take it home, you put it in a bowl of warm water, and then it will start to fall apart, and you'll get all the fur on one side, and then you'll get all the bones of all these tiny little animals, just like that. This pellet here is from a little owl, and you can see that because it's got all these tiny beetle shells in there. That's generally what the little owl's eating most of the time. Okay.
What's your name?
Emma.
And what activities have you done today?
I have done pressing flowers, roasting marshmallows, and doing some stuff with some thread, Viking knitting.
Very good. Which one was your favourite?
Not sure.
They're all as good as each other. Oh, good. Do you do stuff like this at school?
Yes.
Do you have forest school lessons?
No, but we do sewing and everything, compressing stuff in the gardens of our...
Oh, great. And do you like doing that stuff more than maths or things
like
that? Yeah. And would you come and do this again here?
I would.
Great. Lovely voice of Emma at the end there. I'm really aware of how much I push my agenda of, you know, I'm always asking kids, do you like this better than maths? I don't quite know what I'm trying to achieve with that, actually. But yes, so that was Green Caterpillar, and you can find them if you're interested in the sort of things that you heard there, then they operate very much in and around Sussex. So the link to their website is on the Growing Wild show page on radioreverb.com. I love going to stuff like that. It makes my heart sing, seeing all these kids playing around in the woods and just seeing a different way of learning, really. Instead of, you know, for the kids that aren't academic, it's just, and for the kids that are, it's just lovely for them to be able to engage in their environment and to see that they can learn and be good at stuff that isn't necessarily sitting down at a desk. And also educates them around, you know, looking after our wonderful planet. Okay, I'm going to play a song and then we're going to head off to the South of England show. Charles Bradley and You Think I Don't Know. It sounds like it's from ages ago, doesn't it? It was actually really recent. I'm a big fan of his stuff. Okay, so I went to the South of England show in the summer as well. I told you I had a busy summer. And I went along with my pal, James Gaydon. And I gave him the mic to go off and do a few interviews. And this is one that he came back with. And he sought out the National Vegetable Society, who had a lovely stand there. In fact, they'd won a prize for it, which they were proudly displaying their certificate for on the stand. And they're there to, I guess, just act as an advice forum for anyone and everyone who's interested in growing veg and growing their own, and from beginners right through to people who are experienced. And if you find their website, which again will be on the on radioreverb.com on the Growing Wild page, if you head to their website, then there's just such a wealth of knowledge that they're so happy to share. And they also get involved with some schools, and you can get them in. And yeah, they're just like a good beacon of advice for all of us. So James went off and had this chat with Ian, who tells us a little bit more about their organisation.
We're here today to not only promote what we're trying to do as an organisation, which is educate people into growing their own food, particularly vegetables, but also to, as part of the competition stand that was at the side of us here now, we've been very lucky to win a gold medal for it. So
I saw that glimmering certificate there, which is quite an achievement, and you know, many congratulations for that. Tell me, how long has the society been going? When was it established?
It's been going for just over 60 years now. I've been actively involved in it for only the last 6 or so years, but it has a lot of history. Primarily, it was very much a showing organisation, but we're now a registered charity, and a lot of our work is around, as I said before, the education of people into vegetable growing and growing their own food.
Tell me, when you talk about getting new people involved, what sort of demographic are we talking about? People later on in life, or are we talking about children? What sort of people tend to get into this interest?
Well, primarily, it has been a sort of an older generation who've been involved in these sort of activities, but. From my view, it's the gardeners of the future are children, and that's a lot of the area that we're targeting at the moment is trying to get younger people. And I've just been speaking to a few people who have got school projects ongoing, and we are now reaching out and going into schools and helping them set up little gardening clubs, and also helping them run using horticulture and running experiments to grow different types of things in different environments, so let people do experimental design as part of that.
I think that's really fantastic. I do remember, I mean, back in the day when I was at school, it was a case of cress seeds, you know, and that's about as far as it went, really. What would you say, to anyone listening, what would you say are the core benefits or reasons why people should and often can, even if you've got a small area, grow your own vegetables that you would eat?
For me, it's really about understanding where your food comes from. I mean, with the current environment, people think that, you know, vegetables come from a supermarket. They don't actually associate them with growing in a field, in soil, in somebody's garden, on an allotment. So for me, it's really much about educating people where food comes from, as well as actually getting people to understand and actually grow their own food.
And Ian, tell me just in finishing, if anyone wanted to learn some more information about the National Vegetable Society and look to get involved, where could they go to find that information?
On our website, if you just Google National Vegetable Society, it'll come straight up, and there's a whole bunch of information there on not only becoming a member of the society, but also being associated members of societies for educational establishments such as schools and colleges, also individuals, and gardening and horticultural societies can all be part of that.
There you go, National Vegetable Society. Yeah, it's quite hard handing over the microphone to James, actually. I realised that I'm actually more of a control freak than I realised, but I did get to do the edit on that, so that satisfied that need in me. Yeah, the South of England show is an interesting event. I find it maybe slightly too commercial these days. It's mainly just folk trying to sell you things, including Range Rovers, which I found slightly alarming, but you know, I'm happy for a tractor salesman to approach me whilst I'm eating my pork pie, but I'm not sure about a Range Rover Sport, thank you very much. But it was a great afternoon though, and it's one of those events that it's a bit of a premiere event at the old South of England showground, and they do have a lot of things going on there. It's probably just not quite my vibe, but it was nice to stumble across those guys and just to see, I've not actually heard of them before, and to know that they're doing such great work out there, and just to have another arm to our growing society. It's always nice to discover those. Okay, let's have a song before we head off to our final segment of the show, and it's going to be Maybe I Know.
Maybe I know that he's been treating me the way he should. He really loves me. That's all I can say before my tears fall. I just walk away. Oh, but maybe I know that he's been a cheating. Maybe I know that he's been untrue. But what can I do? Oh, deep down inside he loves me, though he may run around. Deep down inside he loves me. Someday he'll settle down. Oh, maybe I know that he's been cheating. Maybe I know that he's been untrue. But what can I do? He really loves me. That's all I can say before my tears fall. I just walk away. Oh,
was Maybe I Know by Leslie Gore. We noticed how much on 60s songs, how much it's women talking about their men cheating and how they just sort of forgive them and it's just part of the bag. I'm glad that that's moved on. You wouldn't hear Beyonce singing such things, would you? But they do carry a lovely tune. Okay, so the final section of this show, we're going to head off to the Old Tree Brewery. Now, these are three chaps that have created what I think is absolutely brilliant. They provide all of the drinks for Silo, the restaurant in Brighton. It's a zero waste restaurant, and they've actually just recently won an award for The Observer. And they do great stuff. So I've eaten there a couple of times, maybe a bit more than that. I'm quite a fan. And noticed that their drinks were all sort of fermented drinks and made from quite foraged items. And it piqued my interest, so I wanted to go and have a chat with these people who had created this, and I'll let Tom tell you about it. I mean, he can explain it far better than I, but they've got this big site down at Field on the Lewis Road, which is the old army barracks, which has been taken over, and they're allowing sort of young enterprises to be there and to see how they get on before it gets properly fully developed. So they've taken this old derelict building, sort of fly tipped to the hilt, and mainly a squatter's party location, and turned it into something really quite brilliant. If you've not seen it or heard of it, then I really encourage you to go down there. They've got all sorts of things happening down there. So yeah, this is Tom describing to us their edible landscape, they call it, and it's basically they've created a garden there that they use all of what they grow there to then put into their drinks or to create the drinks. So this is Tom giving us a tour, starting out at the edible garden and then leading through to into the main building to look at the brew house via the composter and juicer, and then we end up in the cafe. So here we go, here's Tom.
So this is this is the first bit that we got that commissioned to turn into the edible landscape. Planted out just like a strip of herbs along here, really, and then a couple of currant bushes and things like that. And then a lot of stuff just grew. It's amazing. It just spread. Like, we planted one chamomile plant here, and suddenly there's like chamomile plants everywhere in the same season. And the same, this is fat hen, which we've been using in the cafe. So this is amazing, underrated, forgotten plant.
Yeah, you see it a lot. It grows as a weed. People would recognise it potentially as a weed in their gardens.
Absolutely.
But it's delicious.
It's delicious, and we've been pulling it out because otherwise it would just take over our beds. But at the same time, if you just cook that, like, you can cook it with butter, and it's like just this amazing asparagus-y thing.
It's obviously gone to seed now.
Yeah.
So would you be able to cook the seeds with that as well?
Apparently, in past times they used to eat the seeds and prepare it a bit like quinoa, quinoa.
Ah.
Yeah. So mint is one of the things which thought we'd grow everywhere. Mint and borage and everything you can just like put in a drink. And then we had this idea that we wanted to make ice cubes with the flowers in them, with the drinks. You know,
okay. So each ice cube has it frozen within it.
Yeah, freeze a flower in it.
Nice. And, borage would do that especially well because it's so beautifully blue and vibrant.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's quite a lot of space that we're looking at. It's on the Lewis Road is just a mere stone's throw away, but it feels like a completely different environment away from that. You've created a very sort of peaceful space, actually. You've got these beds.
Yeah.
Is the idea to keep it contained within those beds, or would you be happy to have this whole space?
We'd be happy to have much more growth, as soon as we can generate the compost and possibly get some more soil from Gumtree. We bought most of the soil in from people digging up their driveways on Gumtree.
Ah,
so we bought about 5 tonnes of soil in because it needed it.
Right.
But yeah, as soon as we can get the more soil and fertility on the land, we'd like to have planters installed kind of everywhere. Like, so the whole thing is like a walkway of a sort of gallery of plants that have really good edible or material uses.
It's kind of educational as well, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
so you're hoping people can come along, see what you can grow, see what you can use in your food and drink, and then take that away and be able to reproduce it.
The only way we can justify putting so much energy into a garden for like 2 years.
Is that the length of the lease?
It may well
currently?
Be just at least 2 years, yeah.
Oh, right.
So the only way we could justify it is if, yeah, enough people learn about it so that it, you know, it recreates itself.
Right,
So that's definitely what we're going for. Just one of the main things for me, the main motivations behind the whole old tree kind of project is that there's a staggering statistic that of the 20,000 species of edible and useful plants that are known to be out there, 90% of the world's population consume 20 of them.
Yeah. It's insane.
It's just so sad. That's such a reduction of like everything. I mean, if it can make any difference to sort of like, you know, the number of different plants people eat, and the way we see it, that's like a really positive thing.
Yeah.
Biodiversity is like the baseline of environmental health. If you've got biodiversity, then everything just works better. You know, everything from climate to water pollution to, you know, just. No, it kind of heals itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is our composter. Our best thing that we own.
Oh, look at this. So it looks like a giant tombola.
Yeah, yeah. It's a Swedish-made, like, gigantic... is it a hexagon? No, it's just...
I'd have gone with hexagon.
Eight, I think it's eight.
Octagon.
Octagon, yeah. And that means that because the slopes on the sides, the compost tumbles, like, really well. If it's just a circle, it kind of would just stay in a sort of semicircle shape.
Okay.
But because of the flat sides, when you turn it like that, it falls off that side, and it means that it gets more air, which is what breaks it down faster. But this is amazing. Like, so we put loads of orange peel, we made orange juice in here, and all the cafe waste and other brewery stuff goes in here.
Oh, look at that.
That's only about like 3-4 days old.
That's really very well broken down for a 3-4. Look at the steam is coming off it.
I know, and it smells like marmalade. And you could cook in it. Like, we could cook boiled eggs in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Slow cooked eggs.
That is quite impressive. And it's compartmentalised, so you've opened up one half of it. And so this is only 3-4 days old, this compost. What about the other half?
So, yeah, you can see that there's some weeds in there we probably put in about 10 days ago.
Okay.
And so they've broken down.
And they break down okay. You can put weeds in there and that's not a problem.
Yeah, like that's ideally so in the future we'd have a shredder. And but obviously weeds, this is what you need for weeds because it gets rid of all the seeds. No seeds survive over 70 degrees, which is what this heats it to. And it doesn't heat it. That's the thing. It's just the microbes, you know, the bacteria alone combined with the insulation and the right amount of air, that's what's generating all the heat. So cool.
So it takes 3 weeks and then you can reuse it on your garden.
We can put it straight on the back to the soil.
Great.
Come around here.
Okay. So this is an industrial sized juicer. This is the biggest thing I've ever seen.
it's definitely
juicing
not domestic.
Wise. No, you wouldn't get that on your kitchen top.
No.
It's probably, what, 3 feet high, would you say? About that?
Yeah.
It's the colour of juice.
This is the most, they're both amazing machines that we use to make all of our apple juice and cider every year. It's a hydro press, basically. So it uses the pressure of the water from the tap, from a hose, to like fill up the bladder inside it and press all of the juice out of the fruits. So the only sound it makes is juice pouring into the bucket, and it's completely effortless.
Oh, wow.
I know. And yeah, this is our mill, which shreds the apples or the fruits and prepares it for the press.
And where do you mainly source that sort of volume of produce from? You know, your limes and your, I mean, apples, I assume, so like, you go scrumping.
Yeah. Apples are just like, now they're on the trees, we're like putting call outs to people that can't press their apples.
Yeah.
They can bring us their apples and we can give them some juice. And so we hope to source a lot that way, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard people say, like, we shouldn't be planting any more apple trees until we start harvesting all the apples, like, all around us. Like, it's true. People don't. Oh, that's,
that is very
that's
exciting, that valve. a lot of my job, I'm always picking up apples off the floor.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of them that just go to waste.
So. I know, right?
Yeah.
You can make 50 litres of juice every, like, half an hour with one of these things.
Wow.
It's like 100 litres an hour. So, you know.
100 litres an hour?
Yeah. So you need quite a lot of apples to do that.
Yeah.
Like, that 100 litres is, like, several hundred kilos of apples.
Right.
So to make it, like, you know, worthwhile to pay people, you need to be able to sort of preserve it. So we make a lot of cider, and that just gets better and better with age. And then we use the heat from the freezers, which we've got in here in our fermenting space, to bring the temperature up for fermentation.
Right.
So because chest freezers pump out quite a lot of heat, and that causes the temperatures to get up to 20 degrees in here.
That's so clever. So we just walked through a door, and it's completely insulated with silver. It's almost like silver bubble wrap, you know, sort of silver foil bubble wrap. It's kind of space age, really. And it's got three big tanks, 300-litre tanks, two slightly smaller ones. And you've got apple and pear juice in there.
That's actually apple and pear cider vinegar. So we've made some cider vinegar in last October, and we've just put it into this big fermenter. We wanted it to ferment at the same rate so that we'd have one big batch of vinegar ready to bottle. That's basically was cider, and then we let acetobacteria, which comes from the air, get to it, and it's turning into vinegar.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's all it takes. That's all it
takes. Everyone, literally, yeah. We haven't had any... We've never juiced apples and wasted anything. Because it's like you either get apple juice, or you get cider, or you do it fermented properly and get cider, apple juice, cider, or vinegar. You can make them all just by creating various conditions.
Yeah.
And this is elderflower champagne, and then this is our ginger beer culture, which we feed ginger and a bit of sugar to keep it happy.
So yeah, tell me about that then. So is that, I've only heard of that in terms of sourdough before. You have things in terms of feeding something to keep it alive.
It's very
alive.
Similar
is
to
it?
That.
Okay.
It's like that and kombucha. This is kombucha. So these are SCOBYs, which means a symbiotic colony of bacteria and yeast. So these, that culture there that you see in this jar, that's like, it's made of cellulose, but it's basically made of loads and loads of bacteria and yeast that are sort of like feeding off each other.
Yeah, to look at it, if someone had that in their fridge, they'd probably throw that in the bin, thinking
it
had gone a little bit
it's a
over.
Bit, it looks a bit like an alien. So, this is the smiling condition, which is what it's called when you check your brew, and it's bubbling away. So the cafe was a kind of, we were invited to set up a cafe. So here it is,
And so this cafe serves all of the drinks that you make?
Yeah.
And then where does the food come from?
It's really simple because we've got to keep it manageable. So we just do a good sourdough all day breakfast. We use the bread that Silo don't sell with beans, mushrooms, sourdough toast and chives with eggs and salad if needed.
Great.
Yeah.
And I guess the idea eventually to have it in more cities, and but for you not to make it all here, but for it to happen individually at each place, you know?
Yeah, totally. We want to run workshops and teach everything that we're doing, and train people in drinks making, so that could then, they could set up guess it's like a nano brewery, really. That was not a microbrewery that we just saw. Microbrewing is on a 1,000-litre scale, and that's on a, like, 100-litre scale. It works for the kind of fermented drinks that we're talking about, because you don't need them in big batches. Yeah, that's the idea. We want to teach people small-scale brewing so that we can build, like, a network of drink producers that work to sort of regenerate land locally and then use that land to make the local drinking and gardening sort of dream come true.
The enthusiasm from Tom is just so infectious. I realised how many times I said wow during that, and I actually edited out quite a few. I did sort of spend quite a lot of time saying wow, because I was just so impressed with it and how much they loved what they were doing and what they were creating, and the whole idea of passing that knowledge on, you know, for it not to be about how much profit they can make and for it not to be scaled up and having big lorries being driven up and down the country, but to actually educate and to help people be able to create that for themselves, I think is such a wonderful ethos. And they are running lots of workshops and bits and bobs, and you can find them online, and it's the Old Tree Brewery. And again, the link to that will be on the Growing Wild show page on RadioReverb.com. And I think also with that, it's just so wonderful that it's the cyclical, it's such a cyclical process, you know, they grow on the soil and then they compost, and then everything that they compost goes back to the soil, and how they get their ingredients for their drinks from as surplus products. You know, they were making actually some mead while I was there, which was so delicious. And that just came about because a friend of theirs made honey, and it was starting to ferment of its own accord, and so it wasn't useful for the people who were trying to sell it, but for these guys it was perfect because they're only going to further ferment it, so they just had big boxes full of honey that they then turned into this glorious mead. So just the whole ethos behind it is just brilliant, and if you haven't been down there, I really encourage you to go, and the food is so nice, because we had lunch afterwards and yeah, lots of alfalfa sprouts happening and all sorts of goodies. So head down there, it's the field on the Lewis Road, and they are the Old Tree Brewery. We're coming to the end of the show, so thank you for listening as ever, and it won't be such a long time till the next one, I hope, unless, you know, I get maimed by some unknown mammal. So we'll be back next month, and there was another chappy I met at the South of England show who I think I mentioned this in the previous show actually, who was a hedge layer and taught people how to do that and was very keen on the whole thing. So I think next month I'll bring you that interview and some other bits and bobs around the history of our hedges. I'm always reluctant to say what I'm going to do in the next show because I tend to change my mind mid-month and it doesn't seem to come to fruition. But that's a general idea at the moment. I mean, if that's not a hook in, I'm not sure what is. Hedges, I know, exciting. Do carry on listening to our station here at Radio Reverb. You can find me, Charlotte Petz, on Twitter, which is Growing Wild FM, and Instagram, which is also Growing Wild FM, or look me up on RadioReverb.com on the Growing Wild page, and you can get in touch with me via that. I'm always open to suggestion if there's something that you would like to hear, or if there's something that you're doing that's fun and exciting and that you think might be good to get on air, then very open to hear your suggestions. And now I'm going to play you out with a couple of songs, the first one being Sam Cooke and Cupid, and followed by The Cars and Best Friends Girl. So thanks again for listening, and I'll be back next month. See ya.
Heart for me, for me. Cupid, please hear my cry and let your arrow fly straight to my lover's heart for me. Now, I don't mean to bother you, but I'm in distress. There's danger of me losing all of my happiness. For I love a girl who doesn't know I exist, and this you can fix. So, keep
my lover's heart for me. Nobody but me. Cupid, please hear my cry. And let your arrow fly straight to my lover's heart for me. Now, Cupid, if your arrow make a love strong for me, I promise I will love her until eternity. I know between the two of us her heart we can steal. Help me if you will. So, Cupid, draw back your bow and let your arrow go straight to my lover's heart for me. Help me.